Blog Talk Radio.
On Wheels Now.
Welcome to On Wheels Now, your inside look at local motorsports. Live from Las Vegas, July 19th already. Can't believe that. As you can see, Gary's out for this show, but I'm in. And but next show I won't be here, but Gary will be back hosting along with myself tonight. The Freak 33. It's Matt Esposito.
Warm,
hot, summertime. It happens every year in Vegas. Believe it or not. So
yeah, it you know, when it affects the job, then
I know
it just gets kind of sucky.
Yeah, exactly. We got a great show for you tonight. Our guest tonight, Mark Allison. Thanks for coming in, man.
Always a pleasure.
Yeah, it's been a little while, I think, since you've been in, huh?
Yeah, it has been
a little bit. You know, I forget we get different people in and out, and so appreciate you. I know it was last minute. Talking to you, and thanks for stepping up and coming in.
Like I said, always a pleasure to hang out with you guys.
Cool. And we couldn't be hanging out with anybody better than Mark Allison, right?
Absolutely. You haven't set the bar very high, have you?
Hey, you know, no, actually, when the notification came through this morning, you know, I'm like, yeah. Oh, who'd you guess? I'm like, Mark Allison. I'm like, right on. I can't wait to get to the show.
You know, and this is just popped in my head because you're talking about, you know, Mark getting coming. So, have you? You haven't driven a skid plate car, have you?
No, I haven't.
Okay,
no.
So I know you've raced just about everything. So there's a challenge for you. I challenge anybody to get in a skid plate car and go have some fun.
Yeah.
Have you seen that? And I thought, man, you guys are nuts.
I would try anything. Yes, absolutely.
Well, we'll give you an opportunity.
No, I like when Mark's on. I always learn something.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I've gotten an opportunity to drive a super modified, the cars that were on display on the 3rd of July race.
Yeah.
My friend Marty White up in British Columbia has offered me a ride. He comes down for some races at Havasu. I actually sat in it and fit up to it, so I'm ready to give that thing a try.
You think? I mean, I know you can handle it because you've raced just about everything. And let me tell you, those are, to me, just from the past, those are some of the best circle track race cars I've ever seen on short track. I mean, I remember they used to come down, and I don't remember how many they used to have, eight or so race at Vegas, and they would wheel them things around that 3/8 mile in, 12 seconds?
Yeah, there's Marty's one of the only guys that ever went a sub-13 around there.
That is crazy.
Yeah.
That is something else. I don't think I can react fast enough. By the time you get on the pedal, I don't know. I don't know what I'd do.
Well, with a big wing and big tires, they
stick.
They stick down pretty good.
So is that something you think you might?
I'm going to try it.
Do?
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. He wants me to hot lap it and see if I'm comfortable in it. And he said he'd let me race it. So.
Any, like, locally or?
At Havasu.
Oh, shoot.
They come down, I want to say, 3 or 4 times a year.
Do they do it on the vintage night or do they do it on their own night?
They do it with the vintage.
Okay. Thing.
They get about 6 or 8 of them guys that show up with the cars. So
that's cool.
Yeah. Marty goes back to the days when they used to run those cars at Phoenix.
Oh wow!
Can you imagine a super on a mile track?
I can't imagine. I don't know what I do.
If you go on the computer and go back to the old Copper World days and see some of the races that they videoed. The video wasn't so good back then, but you could get an idea of how fast those cars really were. They're scary fast.
Those are so fun to watch. That's probably one of my favorite type of race cars to watch on circle track.
So I keep hearing rumors that they're going to bring the Copper World Classic event back.
No way.
Where they ran midgets, sprint cars, Silver Crown cars, which is a sprint car but bigger, made to run on pavement, the stock cars and the super modifieds all on the same weekend.
No way.
Yeah, that was... I ran a couple of Copper World Classics. That was a cool weekend to race with all of them different cars.
You don't have to do anything else except for that night, so that's cool. I hope they do something like that. That'd be
it will be. I think they would get a lot of interest if they brought back the old Copper World Classic.
Are there quite a few of those super, what do they call them, super modified, super offset modifieds, or what are they calling those?
In the Northeast, there's a series or two that run them. They're more predominant up there. Out west here, Madera used to be kind of the home track of super modifieds.
Okay.
I'm not sure that they run there that much anymore. I think they have one or two special events a year for them.
And kind of exhibition races, kind of like what they've done
They're kind of pricey, and they're few and far between because they are expensive. They are very fast.
Right.
So,
you know, every time I've seen those, and knock on wood, I've never seen an incident between them guys. Those are some really professional drivers.
Yeah, that takes a knack to drive something. Like said, the reaction time and all that. Your margin of error is cut down to almost nothing. Because if something goes wrong, you're going so fast.
That is insane. Well, you got to let us know when you end up doing that, because I want to be there. I can't imagine how quick those – I've never seen them down there myself, so I can't imagine how quick they go on a quarter-mile track like that.
They're the fastest things around Havasu.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I can imagine. No, that's cool. Here I am talking about skid plate, and you're talking about something that's the whole world apart.
That shows you how driving.
You've just about driven anything and everything. I've talked about that before, but what is one of your most favorite things? I know you're big in modified, dirt modified and stuff. What's one of your favorite race experiences, I guess, race cars or something like that?
I like the road racing.
Okay.
I date back to racing the NASCAR races at Riverside and Sears Point. I was at the inaugural Sears Point race in my Southwest Tour car back then.
Wow.
Because road racing is a lot more driver than it is car. I mean, if your setup's pretty good, it's the driving, the shifting, the braking, all that. I love the driving, the dirt tracks, the cleaning of the mud and stuff.
The maintenance of it's different. But, you know, you bring that up, you know, dirt racing, you're one of the guys that I've seen you start in the back and somehow you just make it up to the front because you blink three times and all of a sudden Mark's up front. Like, when did he get up to second place? And before you know it, you're in first place fighting for the lead. And these guys out there look like they're, you know, like hammering these race cars and trying to make them do whatever. And you just look smooth and consistent.
Back when I had my dominant days in the dirt modifieds, Dan gave me a setup that fit my driving style.
Right.
I didn't need the car all jacked up sideways. I could keep the momentum in the corner. And like you said, I was smooth and stayed out of trouble. And I could usually find, and that's what I liked about dirt, you could find a line that you could pass people. A lot of pavement tracks, there's always what we refer to, or a lot of people, the sweet spot or the fast groove or the preferred line.
Okay.
And usually you can pick that out by watching qualifying. You don't see guys qualify on a pavement track clear on the bottom, and the next guy out to qualify is qualifying on
the
bottom.
It's always the same, yeah.
Yeah, they usually run real within a few feet of the same line.
Right.
The dirt, sometimes you'll see that. You'll see the sprint car guys, one guy will go to the top, the next guy will go to the bottom. Or you're in the top in one corner and the bottom in the other corner. Right. And that's what I like about the dirt. There's more to it than just a good handling car and driving. You've got to think, and the track changes.
Right.
I've always told the pavement guys, you think a pavement track changes between the hot lapping in the heat of the day and in the evening?
Right.
Go run a dirt track. What you run on in the heat race and what you run on the main is two totally different tracks. Not even the same.
Well, you got a lot of different things happening. The moisture of the track changes, the different areas of the track moisture changes, the drivers react different to those. So
and some tracks, they'll blacken up and go slick. Some of them will blacken up and take rubber and get faster. And you've got to feel that. It's something you feel it changing from lap to lap.
And I would imagine, you know, I mean, you've been to a lot of different dirt tracks. I would imagine the type of dirt you're racing on changes differently.
It is.
And the different climate areas change differently than like
there
out
is.
West.
Yeah, some people call it the gumbo clay in the Midwest that is different from the clay out here. Manzanita used to have this really good clay that would stay tacky all night long and held the moisture. Some tracks like El Centro, when it was running, they had a chemical that they used on the farm roads to keep the dust down for farming that they put on the track that drew the moisture in.
Wow.
And it always stayed fast. That's why I like El Centro.
So you like a tacky track?
Not the hammer down where you're just a horsepower thing. You always want them to kind of, I call it glaze off.
Sure.
And get a little bit slicker. So it takes the horsepower out of the game. You have to have some finesse.
Is that a dirt thing? You think horsepower has a big play in dirt versus?
The term tacky or heavy, when a track, the heavier the track is, the more power
you need. Okay.
You can see sprint cars, when a track's heavy,
mm-hmm.
they'll pull the wheelie down the straightaway. They have so much bite.
Wow.
Where else do you see
that? Yeah, that's true. Exactly.
So, yeah, I've run tracks where you don't lift. I've had nights at Mojave, you pick an early heat race and it the slimy part goes away and the tack comes in where it's like optimum. I was driving Phil Penny's car the first time I ever went around that track and never lifted. Literally held my foot to the floor, backed it into the corner. And when I came in, Dan says, he goes, it didn't sound like you lifted. I go, no, the first couple of laps, I was just cracking the throttle. And I thought, my brain said, I don't need to lift. In oval track racing, your brain tells you the corner's coming. You need to slow.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Well, when you pitch the car, and that's what scruffs off the speed. Otherwise, it would just fly right off the track. There's been a few tracks in my career that I've run across that you could just hammer it down like that.
Wow.
So, yeah, when you're doing that, you wish you had more power. But when they dry up and get slick, most everybody can overpower the track, and it comes to the finesse.
And with, IMCA being a big player in the type of dirt racing that you've done, are you limited to the horsepower ratio?
They are now. They've gone to the crate motor. You can still run an open motor, but you pay a penalty for it.
Right.
I want to say it was 2008 and 9, I think, or 9 and 10. Can't remember. Getting old. I ran the Barnett Harley-Davidson series, and they kind of had open modifieds, kind of like the UMP modified.
Right.
You can run any motor. They had a better tire. It was more hammer down racing.
No kidding. Did it draw, I wouldn't say better talent, but kind of the cream of the crop talent?
I don't think it did. It was a lot of the same guys.
Okay.
It's just the Barnett series put up money, so the guys moved over to there.
Because I remember you traveled back east to run that Barnett series, you and Dan.
Yeah. I actually went to the Alltel 100 twice, which was a learning experience. That was a 100,000 to win modified race. The first year they had it, Scott Blomquist won it.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, they had over 400 cars show up for that.
That's amazing. It's amazing what $100,000 would bring in.
Absolutely.
And that's to win, so they had a payout, I would assume, down the line,
It dropped pretty fast. I think it was like 20,000 for second, 10,000 for third. I can't remember. It's
still pretty damn good for third, fourth, fifth, probably.
But the talent of people, Jimmy Owens was there. I think he finished third or fourth. There were some talented people at that race.
When you arrive to a track like that, how do you get do you feel intimidated at all by them? Some of them guys, or do you feel like you're right there with them?
We were right there at that particular event. Out of the 465 cars showed up, I qualified 48. So we were in the top percent.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Of it. Yeah. We ran pretty good there. We were fast.
And I only know from the Doolin, the desert type races, but you guys do a lot of racing, and you got mains all the way. You qualify to get in the next heat and heat to the main.
After everybody qualified on the clock, a heat race was 24 cars, 15 laps.
Wow.
On Monday night, and we raced all week long to get into the A. So the heat race was 24 hours, 15 laps. The winner went to the A main, second went to the B main. Everybody else was done for them.
Oh, wow.
But you acquired passing points so you could work your way up. So the passing points you got on Monday night moved you further forward in the lineup on the second night. So you progressively, if you were fast and passing people, you worked your way up so you were starting closer to the front every night.
Interesting.
And at the end of each night, the final A main, like on Monday night, they only took first and second, I think, went to the $100,000 race. Then everybody else had to start over again.
Do the faster guys start in the front or the back? Or they
the
just,
fast.
Front, always up front? Okay.
So that makes it even harder to pass.
Right.
The guys that have been passing and running up front or getting passing points are moving closer to the front.
To the front. Wow. Interesting.
Yeah, it's kind of intended to give you, if you have a bad night or you didn't qualify good and you are fast, it gives you an opportunity to work your way into the race. It kind of makes it where mainly all the fast guys get in. And that's kind of what the fans want to see. They want to see the cream of the crop, you know.
Right.
They want to see the Jimmy Owens, Billy Moyer, Scott Blomquist type guys in there. And that it was loaded with dirt late
good race. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, when you throw $100,000 up.
Yeah, they'll jump in a modified, right?
Yeah, yeah, you throw $100,000 up, it doesn't matter if pavement or dirt, you're going to have a bunch of guys there.
Have you thought about yourself going the other direction into a late dirt late model in the past? Or?
I had a dirt late model way back, back when Swenson sponsored me.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I ran a dirt major.
I didn't realize that. I never knew that.
Yeah, I've got a few pictures of it somewhere. Somebody told me I sold to a guy in California, and they said it's still sitting on the trailer because he bought the trailer. He said, you want to sell the trailer too? Like, sure, I'll sell you anything.
That's
I love the car and the trailer. Somebody said it's still sitting in his backyard. He never ran it.
Oh, wow.
Because they said, yeah, I seen a Swenson's ice cream car in a dirt late model. You know?
That's funny. And you bring up Swenson.
Is his name Mike?
Yeah, right. That's me. That would be me. I'd buy it. We'd still be sitting on the trailer. That's interesting that it's still, they never raced it or anything like that.
That's what I heard.
Huh. You bring up Swenson's because going back to asphalt racing, that's one of the things I remember most about. And I didn't know Mark from, you know, the next guy. It was just so clean. It must have been a new body or something. I think I remember the number 5 and then Swenson's. That was really all that was on that body. It was all white.
Yeah.
Cool, and that's what attracted me to that car was, man, it's just so clean.
Yeah, it's funny you say that because Kyle Busch was he was too young to get in the pits, so he was up there in the grandstands, and he would film the races.
Oh, wow.
Because his dad was racing
Tom.
Back then. Uh-huh. So he'd film the races from the grandstands, and he said one night that was his favorite car. That
oh,
car.
Wow.
Most of, like,
yeah, that's funny. That's
we
really
had an ice cream cart that we sold ice cream at the racetrack. They let us sell the ice cream at the racetrack.
That's pretty cool. You could have, especially in Vegas, you can have a better sponsor than an ice cream sponsor.
Yeah.
They stuck with you for a while, too. Different.
They were with me for 7 years. They sponsored
me. That's pretty good. That's amazing.
They helped pay for my tour car when we went to Sears Point and Riverside. They sponsored me. When we went to Phoenix for the tour races, it was a Swenson's car. Yeah, we had a really good working relationship. We did a lot of fundraisers. We worked with the Make-A-Wish Foundation.
Okay.
One year, we called the race car the Ice Cream Dream Machine.
Wow.
Because they took proceeds from the ice creams that we sold and gave to the Make-A-Wish Foundation.
Okay.
A guy named Richie Smith in Boston, he owned the rights to over 100 novelty bars. So he created an ice cream bar called the Make-A-Wish Bar.
Oh.
So all the proceeds from that bar went to the Make-A-Wish Foundation. Wow. So we really pushed that ice cream bar. And it was the upper end
really
ice cream bar.
That's really cool. I can only imagine how many, young kids and wishes that you guys.
We did a bunch of fundraisers for Make-A-Wish. We'd take the race car to a park or someplace, any place that Make-A-Wish and Swenson's had something going. That's why I wound up having two late models. One of them was
a show car.
Yeah.
That's a good idea.
And they always wanted to do it on the weekend when I was racing. I'm like, man, we need to put a body on one of these older cars and make it look good.
Take it out. Yeah. Kids can look at it.
That's
cool.
That's one of the things that kept them with me for 7 years.
Wow.
That extra effort. That's something I've always said with racing. It's an effort in, results out. You put the effort in.
Yeah. I heard you say that before. You know, and maybe it does happen locally, but I don't see a lot of teams. It don't seem like a lot of teams really do that much anymore to take their cars out and kind of show them off and get involved in some local.
I think the track was restricting a lot.
Local events. Well, not just at the track, but like off track, at different charities and things like that.
So you guys do the touch a truck.
Yeah, we
thing,
do touch
right?
a truck
that
every year.
Cool. That's
yeah, that's cool. It goes to a great cause, and you know, obviously during COVID they didn't do it, but this last year they did, and it's really amazing that you know, to be involved with something like that. It's really
in this
cool.
day and age with the internet and everything, corporate sponsorship's hard to nail down.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And you know, unfortunately, if you've got a potential sponsor and they go to a race and there's 50 people in the
right.
grandstands that holds
right.
5,000, they're like...
Yeah, they look more at the social media end of it, like you said, you know, not really the what they're getting out of the local experience. Because
the whole deal with Swenson's had really nothing. John, the Western Regional Manager for Swenson's, he was a good friend of mine. That's how it all came about. The local racing isn't what appealed to him. It was taking the race car, like we did a display on the strip when they opened Polo Tower.
Yeah.
They put a Swenson's store in there.
And that's been around a long time, by the way.
So those kind of things is really what locked the sponsorship. For the racing on Saturday nights, he loved John grew up in Southern California, and he used to go to Saugus all the time.
I love Saugus.
So
it's one of my favorite
He grew up with that, and he loved going to the races, him and his wife did.
Mm-hmm.
And their son, Johnny, I kind of took him under my wing and brought him on the crew. It was like a big brother to him.
Right.
So it really worked out well. It was a very good relationship.
Yeah, that's a good point with sponsors, because that's, you know, because the racing, that's more our thing, you know, what we do and what we can you know, partially give back to our sponsors. But they're looking at a different aspect of it, is to be able to show off something that's unique, that's different from the competition or something else. So
yeah, I just think it's harder for a short track Saturday night racer to land a corporate sponsor like that.
Right.
It's real hard. Most of the time you've talked to people, like my situation, it was a personal
relationship
that got it. But then when I got it, I had to perform. I had
to learn it.
Yeah, it wasn't just the racing at the track. It was everything
off the track
that we did.
Yeah, then there's a lot of work involved, because it, you know, scheduling, you got a lot of races to do on top of the, you know, the appearances that you don't want to give back with. So, I don't know. That's something you don't seem like you see a lot of. Your headset's okay?
Yeah.
Hold on. Technical difficulties. Did I do something?
No, I think it might be the mixer.
Oh. You still... It'll pop
it
out.
It went real faint. I can hardly hear you.
I think it'll come back. Sorry about that. We'll have to.
From all the years of racing, I can't hear anyway.
Well, speaking of that, we'll talk about HearClear. If you need hearing aids, talk to Cindy Clark at HearClear, 725-333-4327. She also makes racing earbuds.
Yeah,
if you ever need any.
I have my hearing aid on in my right ear in all the years of racing. You know, when I first started racing, earplugs, that's for sissies. We don't need earplugs.
It's funny how over time, you just don't realize it. It just starts to fade and fade and fade. But, you know, it's the price we pay, I guess. Could be worse. Could be worse.
I'm guessing you're the type of driver that wants to hear the car.
I guess.
I'm guessing you're the type of driver who wants to hear your car.
Yeah, yes, I am.
And because we were talking about how you tried your new and it was so quiet that you couldn't hear your.
Yeah, exactly. Like I use the foam ones because I like to hear the engine. I like to hear when somebody's coming up next to me, and I do have a set of earbuds from Cindy that really work for the radio part of it, but I can't hear anything else.
You know, be able to, you know your car and you know your RPMs just by the sound of it. You don't even have to look at your dashboard at all.
Do you want to try a different headset? Some of those might work better.
I can hear it. Just like the volume went down by 50% or so.
I don't know what happened.
It's a loose wire somewhere.
Okay.
I mean, we haven't found it yet.
Well, the hearing part for the dirt racing where you don't run a mirror. You rely on that.
Really?
To kind of hear and tell where they are.
Is that a pretty common rule? No mirrors in a...
Yeah, most dirt race, like the dirt late models that you see on TV, no mirrors and no radios.
Oh.
Now, they use what they call the stick guy. He's got two of the, landing airport lights, and they know some guys use green, some guys
Zero
use white.
Colors. Okay.
And they'll spread them apart or put them together, signaling like if you're leading.
Yeah.
And that was always a struggle. When you're leading, you stick with the groove that's working for you. Well, you don't know if the high groove came in. The guy back there in fifth place, he's searching all over till he finds something.
Right, and he's going to start
you
to
don't know
up.
Until he goes blowing by you.
Wow.
Well, your stick guy's telling you whether you're stretching out or closing, or he can signal you to move up, how they hold the things, move up, go up to the top and go to the bottom. So I never
knew that after all these years. That's pretty cool. So like you said, you learn something new. Thanks for the education. We're always learning something. That's pretty cool.
Well, when I was racing with Dan would just walk up to the fence where I could see him.
Yeah.
And if I was running the bottom and the top was coming in, he'd just hold his hand on his head on the top. Tell me move up,
right?
You know, sometimes if I was stretching it out, he'd do this,
right?
You know, indicating you're pulling away, or if I went by and his hands were like this, that told me somebody was right there.
Yeah.
We didn't use the colored lights. We just,
hand signal.
He'd tell me where he's going to stand, and I'd watch for it.
Well, that's cool because we're like with Dan. If you don't know Dan, I miss Dan, by the way. But I was watching you guys racing at Pahrump one day, and I was standing next to Dan, and you're moving up, passing some guys, and I was like, well, what do you think? He's like, yeah, he knows, he's got this. He knew the guys you were racing with. You knew what was happening with the track, and it, sure enough, it was a few laps till you were up front and running, so he didn't have to do anything except just stand there and watch.
So
that's pretty cool.
Early on racing with Dan, you hated to come in the pits if you screwed up.
make sure you don't.
Yeah, and on all the rules I raced him, he never raised his voice or nothing. It's just what he said. You're like,
right.
Oh.
I told this story before. It was one of the first times when I bought one of your modifieds. It was on the asphalt, and I've never driven modified really before. So took it out there racing, and I Dan, after I came in, he's like, kind of monotone, was like, you drive like shit. I knew I drove like shit. I just didn't want to hear it. But I'd never driven a modified before at the time.
Yeah.
So, I came from running a street stock or whatever it was.
I always told people would come up, and a lot of people thought he was my father. And I'm like,
funny.
No, he wasn't. I'm telling you. Be careful what question you ask, because you may not like the answer.
Exactly. But I tell you what, that's probably one of the smartest guys in, with a race car or, anything around race cars. He knew about it.
We went back to Florida once, and Dan said, you got to go to Don Gartlett's Museum. I said, okay, we'll plan it in the trip. So we go to Gartlett's Museum, we pull up there, and Don Gartlett is out on his hands and knees in front of the museum, and people donate and buy the paver stones with their name on them. He's got a little notepad, and he's figuring out where the stones are going to be.
Huh.
And Dan sees him, and Dan goes over with his knee and pushes him over. And he looks up, and I see this. I'm like, oh, shit.
What's he doing?
And he looks up, and Gartlett goes, Dan, and I realized at that point he didn't just know him. They were personal
friends. Wow.
And the first thing Gartlett says is, you still got that old dog? And he goes, no, he passed away a long time ago. The story was that Dan always had a German Shepherd dog, and he took it to the races back when he was running Top Fuel cars. Anyway, Don Gartlett went to pet the dog, and Dan told him, don't pet him, he'll bite you. No, dog's here alone. He pet him. They had to get stitches. Dan's dog. I'm like, oh, that's it. But I would tell people, if you ever go back to Florida, go to Gartlett's Museum. The Drag Race Museum is really cool, and even his own personal car collection. And he has a really cool military collection of old Jeeps and military equipment.
Cool.
He's got a really cool collection. It impressed me.
Right.
We actually worked on a guy named John Bradley's flathead dragster, and I think the story of
that's crazy.
I can't remember. That dragster set the fastest time for a flathead dragster, which still stands today because they don't race them anymore.
Flathead.
But we brought the car to my shop, and Dan knew the car, so we did some work to it to put it back together before it went back to Gartlett's Museum. So that was pretty cool. I I got to work on a lot of cool stuff with Dan.
Oh, yeah. Because
he wasn't just an oval track guy. He was a racer,
right.
Period. His,
right.
His forte was Top Fuel cars. He had driven them. He had driven the Rat Trap and a bunch of the fuel alters. And the people I met in Southern California that we started taking all of our engine work to Southern California because Dan knew everybody. And like at Mickey's machine shop, they meeting all those guys that Dan had grown up with. There were some pretty cool shops kind of tucked back in the, I'm going to say back out of this little shop
right.
that they did incredible work at.
Oh, yeah.
Dan
those,
knew all these.
The big names, right, that
yeah.
you know, made these guys, the fast guys, who they are. That's crazy. Yeah, Dan, you know, he had this, I forget what car it was. He had a drag car sitting in your shop one time. I was over there. I don't remember what he was
yeah,
doing.
Yeah, he'd
to
always
it.
Bring cars into the my shop that
yeah.
drag race people that most of the time they were struggling. So he'd bring the cars in. He knew the four-link suspension. He
right.
knew how to, you know, if they were breaking loose or they couldn't get by it, he knew how to fix them.
That's crazy.
And everybody that he came through the shop, they usually came back and said, yep, you fixed the problem.
Fixed it, it's done. Yeah,
he knew drag racing. He knew
racing
in general.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know Greg Knight, right?
Yep. Yep. Another guy that knows.
Yeah, Greg had the utmost of respect. He had met Dan when Dan worked at Stock Car Products for Tom Hamilton.
Oh, no way. I didn't know that.
That's the first time I met Dan, and I didn't realize, I didn't put two and two together when I ran into him
mm-hmm.
15 years later. It was the same person.
That's
so he said, I used to work for Tom Hamilton. I'm like, yeah,
I know you.
That's where I met you. We were at Stock Car Products one time, and Dan was the shop foreman there, and that's when I met him. But, you know,
sure.
just another guy working there.
Right.
And it was about 15, 20 years later, I run into him again.
That's
and that's
great.
When him and I got together and started racing.
Yeah. No, that's cool. Yeah, great. Like you bring up Greg Knight, obviously. Yet another guy that's just sharp. He knows just about everything, and especially in circle track racing. I don't know if he's gotten into anything else besides that, but he knows cars, engine setups, you name it.
Yeah.
And he makes it look easy.
Well, you think about it, the fundamentals, whether you're going in a circle straight, they want more power and more bite.
Right. Yeah, I guess physics are the same. Everybody wants the same thing, right?
Yep,
just
yeah.
how you get there is different.
That's one thing I never have done. I've never raced a car down a quarter mile straight.
Right.
I haven't done that yet.
I'm sure you'd probably do well at it, but you probably, your instinct is to want to jerk it to the left.
Yeah.
Mark, no. Is that something you like a bucket list item, you think, you might want to try?
What I've got a 65 Nova that I'm kind of working on restoring.
Okay.
And I'm going to make a hot rod out of it. I'm not going to restore it back up like a 65
right.
Nova.
It's going to be a driver.
Yeah, I want to basically make a race car that I can drive on the street. And then I've got my old 75 Chevy truck. I'm going to restore
yep.
that from high
Sweet.
School. I've got my 30 Model A. It's a driver.
Wow.
It's an all-original 30 Model A, mechanical braking.
No That's cool.
I tell people, you don't drive that thing very fast.
Or very far. That's around the block car.
They say it'll go 45, 50 miles an hour. But that's pretty, you don't want to drive it that fast.
That's cool.
See the wheels? Yeah, you know what I mean.
Right.
So,
and a lot of guys like make those in the drivers. They use like S10
yeah.
chassis and things like that. But
yeah, I think still today the Model A was one of the most produced cars ever. So they're not as
right.
collector cars. You can get them from about $8,000 to $12,000, depending on the condition.
No way.
Yeah.
But they're still
yeah.
really cool. They're
but,
one of my...
Yeah, as a driver, I mean, it's all original. It's got all
yeah.
the metal fenders and everything still on
that's
it.
That's cool.
It's a pretty cool car.
No, oh, that's cool. I'd have to.
So yeah, I've got a couple of projects as. I tell myself, the company I work for, they pay me too well to quit. So
like, you never, yeah, that's true.
So, I keep telling Linda when I retire, I'll just kind of tinker around in the shop. But,
well, I've been reading that a lot of people are upset with the drag racing, unlike a Midnight Mayhem that we have here.
Really?
At the other, because people are bringing their Teslas.
Oh, really? The new stuff that are...
And the Teslas, it's, you know, all torque all at once.
Hmm.
And then I guess there's a cheat code out there that you can load up into your car that reads the light so you pull zeros,
yeah.
reaction time, everything. So it's like
kind of like how we were talking about, oh, someone with money coming in and
right.
just kind of ruining it for everybody else. That's kind of happening in drag racing,
huh.
too.
Yeah.
Is you can't just go out on Friday night and have fun because someone's just dominating and just...
Yeah, I've heard, I'm not real up on all the drags, but I've heard, they call them no electronic events.
Oh.
You can't have
no
that,
right.
that
well,
stuff
that, that
to
would
do
make
that.
Sense. It's funny because I've never thought of that being
yeah.
an issue or a problem, but
yeah.
that
But it's
could
been
be.
So much, yeah, that they've had to have, yeah, non-electric
yeah.
events. Not
wow.
let them.
Yeah.
Well, because you got a guy that, you know, goes in to the dealer, buys a car, and he can program in something and go out there
yeah.
and switch.
And that's
them
just
like,
and then a lot of them are breaking the, I'm not sure what ours is, 12 seconds, I think.
Oh, I don't know. Isn't after it's like so fast?
It's like 13 or whatever. Do you have to have roll cage,
hell, yeah.
safety
all
equipment?
Safety, yeah.
So that's what it is these cars are going out and they're doing their first run. Bam, throwing in, you know, 10, 11 seconds and then getting yelled at. And
right.
They're getting, no, you can't be on. But they prove their point.
Right.
But it's
yeah.
also taken up.
I think that's what kind of made that Street Outlaws more popular because it's old school. A guy
yeah.
starts with a fly
right,
car.
Right,
and
right,
and
right. Nothing right. Just
yeah,
and,
old
yeah.
school.
Muscle.
You know,
yeah, exactly. So.
I think some of the original old NHRA events, even before it really became, with the guy, the starter stood out there with a flag, and he just raised it up. That's when he took off before the Christmas tree ever
right.
came along. That's how they
yeah.
started the races.
That's crazy.
So
yeah,
yeah.
I never thought of that. But they, I guess they should. Maybe they can have their own, like, you know, electronic
yeah.
divisions or whatever races aside from.
Yeah, my understanding, most of the bracket cars can run faster than what they dial
right.
in.
Right.
The key is that consistency.
Yeah.
And they, nowadays, it's all a computer. If they,
right.
they usually have to detune the car a little bit because it wants to run faster. So they run enough tracks and the atmospheric conditions, everything to change between the heat and the,
mm-hmm.
and the evening. They know what to change on it, whether it's taking some of the boost out of the turbo,
mm-hmm.
some of the timing out, whatever it is, they figure out how to detune it, or if the track gets faster, they uptune it.
But, you know, it sounds like fun because you're just dialing it in. So that's part of the fun is dialing in, and you don't want to go too fast or slow. But it's like you hear that in circle track race, like, well, why would you want to put like a time on? So you want to go as fast as you can, you know?
Right. For drag racing, the bracket racing makes it fair.
Yeah.
I mean, you can pull up in, you know, Grandpa's car, and if you're good on the light and you're consistent, you can make some money.
So is that what it's about, is like your reaction
yeah.
time?
It would be like running a street stock against a late model. You
right.
take the time differential, give the street stock that much of a head start.
Right.
If he's consistent enough on his time,
right.
in theory, the late model and him would finish at the start
same
line.
Time or close
so
enough. Yeah.
If you did something like that, I think the street stock, if you go on the My Laps or something,
right.
I think they run more consistent laps. If
right.
you look at the fall-off rate because of the tires,
mm-hmm.
a late model, and their fastest laps are within the first 10 laps
right.
usually.
Yeah.
So they start falling off. Well, that's where their inconsistency comes. So the similarities to drag racing
right.
like that,
interesting.
You know, we all would like to be run the same lap for 100 laps
right.
and qualify. That
don't happen, right.
We could dominate the races if we could do that.
Hey, that sounds like fun, you know.
That's something that I learned a long time ago. The last race at Irwindale, I didn't look at my laps to see what I ran.
Right.
But Phil Blackson, when they told me, he goes, you know you ran within 0.2 every lap from the beginning to the end?
Wow.
But really? That impresses me.
Right. Well, you know, and you know, I want your head to get too big, but, I mean, but you know, you're one of the guys that I see that's the most consistent from start to finish. I'm talking about the late model truck series races
yeah.
that I see, especially with the American Racer tire that we run. Your lap times are so consistent from start to the end, and sometimes even faster near the end. Because let me tell you, Mark don't give it away to anybody. So
right.
if he's challenging something, I don't know where he finds that extra out of that, you know, race truck, but he finds it, and he makes sure that you got to earn. If you're going to beat him, you're going to earn it.
You can,
I don't know how you do it, but
you can ask Stan about that.
Yeah, exactly. Stan's been through it. You know, David Levitt from Tucson's been through it. Every guy that's challenged, whether you're beating them or not, you've
yeah.
made them work for it.
It's knowing your car. It's being at one with your vehicle. If you're fighting with the race car, you're not going to win.
Well, I can only imagine how many hours of seat time you have, Mark. But it shows, because to be able to adapt and adjust and take something. And I'm telling you, the it's not a junk race truck, but the truck that Mark races is not. It's not, you know, the best one out there either, and he makes it the best out there, let me tell you. So
the first race of the year that Lee beat me, that bothered me.
Yeah.
I was all over Lee, and I've known Lee forever.
Right. And Greg tweaks stuff for Lee, and I know stuff they're doing, but
well, Greg could see my frustration. I'm like, anyways, I hate being beat.
Right.
And Greg says, he put it the best. He said, you probably have more talent than the whole field you're racing against.
Absolutely.
So don't feel bad.
Right.
So, yeah, I get that. I've got thousands of laps and hundreds of races.
In all different stuff, too, to be able to, you know, get that experience out there.
So that truck, I swear, anyone's race.
Yeah.
It's exactly how you guys gave it to me. I have not changed the spring or a shock.
And let me tell you about this truck too. Like Greg knows that truck better than anybody. But that the motor in that thing, they said, is probably one of the most.
It's the oldest one.
Oldest one they have. They call it old faithful because it never fails them. Knock on wood. So we'll stop talking about it.
Yeah.
But you know it just. You know, it's consistent, and you make it work. It's just crazy.
That's what I was informed about what all the power, because they'd taken all them trucks to the dyno.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was told, just FYI, you got the truck that had the lowest power. I'm like, okay,
I'll make it work.
So, but they said that truck's consistent, and that's what I rely on now.
Right.
I've worked out that if you watch it, down the straightaway, I struggle with it. Everybody can pull me, but when it gets to the corner,
I've tried to follow Mark before. I was like, I don't know how he drives it as fast as he does through that corner. It's crazy to me. But
I'll let out a secret. That scares the hell out of me.
He goes, close his eyes. That's how Gary said he drives. He closes his eyes and turns.
It's just the setup, Greg. Has in that truck. It's always been in that truck. I think that's the one that Kwasniewski, that truck.
Yep.
It's just a happy truck in the corner.
Right.
I think if you threw another 20 horsepower at it, it would probably unbalance it.
You have to go start over and adjust stuff. You know, that's one thing about Greg, and I've seen this over and over, like, you know, the trucks, you know, they do allow bump stops and things like that. We do allow that. But Greg's setups are conventional setups, and there's consistent. He's gone out there, and I've seen him beat guys, you know, that are way faster just off consistency, you know.
Yeah.
He's like, well, you know, we can go out there, we can win more races this way or finish higher than these other guys. They'll be fast one night, and they'll be the slowest the next.
It's working within your limits.
Well,
if you know the limits of your vehicle and you're not burning off the tires and you're not, you know, you learn how to make the vehicle work for you, and then you get that consistency.
Well, that's what you alluded to earlier about, you know, all of a sudden at the end of the race, I'm up front.
Right.
I've won, 15 track championships, regional championship. I won the winter series once in Arizona.
It's crazy.
It's off that consistency.
Yeah.
It's not just you got to finish every race, but you got to get up front.
Right.
And I'd say in my career, I have more second places.
Well, yeah, it's funny to hear that, but, you know, to me, that's a win. Second, you know, top five to me is a win. I'm happy when I get a top five, but, you know, you have, you know, a lot of second place finishes, but to me, those are wins on top of your wins.
Yeah.
It's just crazy.
So there was a point when we were running for the IMCA points, and it seemed like every time I got second, the top four pull up to the claimer, and you get out of your car and you're congratulating.
Right.
And the guy that would beat me, that's my first IMCA win.
So,
I'm like, really?
Against me?
Right. You know,
hey, you mentioned that before. Like, a lot of guys got their first wins against you.
Yeah. R.C. Whitwell, who runs the Dirt Lake Models and Modifieds in the Midwest, his first win came over. He got on, he's jumping up and down on the car, and he's all happy. I'm like, Let me guess. This is your first win.
So that's the word around the industry. So, hey, Mark's racing with us tonight. All right. Get my first win.
Yeah.
No.
But then again, how many of these drivers became better drivers by beating you?
Yeah. Absolutely.
By learning, following behind you, getting ahead of you, and, like, you know, coming up to the challenge and actually winning.
Right.
Yeah, another one, I think, if I'm not mistaken, I could be wrong on this one, Jeremy Payne, who's won the Duel in the Desert 3 times.
No way. Okay.
When he got out of go-karts, he got into dirt modifieds, and I think his first win came out.
That's crazy.
Mark Allison, producing winners since 19.
That's why I love it. I'm trying to get my first win, so in the late model truck series.
Well, it's not going to be a skid plate, I can tell you that.
Right. You know, and then speaking of wins, you know, Mark, for the late model truck series, 3-time champion of ours, gave it up to Stan 1 year, but you're kind of on your way this year again. So
it looks like that.
So, you know, keep it up. You know,
I would say I'm not too old to learn yet. At the end of the year when Stan beat me, I'm like, man, he just was faster. He just beat me. And then his crew chief enlightened me and said, well, I was going two races on a set of tires. Stan was putting a new one.
Right. Tires make a difference.
And I'm like, well, that explains it.
Right. Yeah, so, he's obviously, you know, tires make a difference.
But he was also hot that year. He was just knocking it out of the park.
Stan kind of almost, it was his own demise at Willow Springs.
Right.
Because he only put 2 right sides on,
right?
I think is what he said.
He only got 2.
He decided, I'm not going to put 4 on, and ran him down.
Yeah, exactly.
What was it, 8,000th of a second?
That was cool. That was a crazy, crazy night at Willow Springs.
That was a good race. I couldn't believe how many fans came over and said, man, that was a cool race.
Yeah. You know what? That's something you guys did, was put on a great show for the fans there. And that I like helping little tracks like that because, you know, they're doing what they can to keep that track open. And it's cool.
Yeah, I don't know if you guys saw the little kid that came over and his family.
I did. Yep.
And I gave him the second place trophy. That kid was so excited about that.
And you know what? That kid will remember that. And you know what? And I would assume that someday he'll probably be in a race car, you know, just because of something like that. So that's really cool.
I started giving trophies away back when Pahrump first opened, because like new tracks, they were given, we would run a heat race and a trophy dash and all that in the main.
Yep.
And there's some nights I'd have 3 trophies from clean sweep at Pahrump.
Right.
So I started giving them away. And I started that back in the, was it the mid-80s when Pahrump opened?
Well, you know, so you set a trend, because I've seen other guys follow your lead with that throughout the years. Not everybody, but every once in a while they'll give something away to the kids in the in the stands.
You've been to my house.
Yeah.
I've done more trophies than I ever need.
You got a very forgiving girlfriend, but that's your life.
Yeah. Linda and I have been together like 18 years. And
she knows.
I'm with her. Sometimes if I come back late from the races, I put the trophy in the bed before she wakes up, and she said some very nice things about me when I do.
What's this? Yeah.
So, yeah, no, she's happy when I give them away.
Right. No, that's cool. You know, you can't, you know, there's nothing that, you know, is better than to see a kid's face light up when you give them something like that.
My friend Marty White, the super modifier, he has a very illustrious career in super modified and sprint car racing. And his wife did something that was really cool. They showed me a picture. She took all of the placards off his trophies and put them in a picture frame.
Wow.
And put all his wins each year.
That's a pretty good idea.
And I thought, that's pretty cool. As soon as she told Linda that, Linda goes, that's what we're doing.
Trophies can go, the placards stay.
Yeah. He goes, that way, you know, you can keep track. You can take all the ones from a year, put them together or whatever. You can put all your championship ones.
That's a great idea. Absolutely.
Yeah, it was really cool. She did a really nice job in the frame and the backdrop on them. It was really cool.
That's cool. That's kind of our idea with, like, I don't know if you've seen it or not, like our late model truck series, we have a overall championship trophy that we keep, but we put the name on it every year.
It's like the Indy Warner Trophy.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
You know, and that I, you know, just so we can, hopefully we'll see 20 years plus on there as long as we're around, you know, and probably see half of those, if not more, Mark's name on it.
Yeah.
But that's really cool. We might do something special. This is our fifth year, even though we only, you know, 2020 was a bust for a lot of people, but we might do something special this year for the champion late model truck.
Well, my crew's looking forward to the banquet. They love banquet.
You know, so do we. And we love having the banquet with you guys. So
yeah, that's definitely that's the best banquet there is.
That's good to hear. You know, we try to go all out. You know, we do want to do for you guys what you do for us all year. So it's the least we could do. So we look forward to it. December.
The way racing's headed, the short track racing.
Yeah.
In this day and age, I think you guys do an excellent job. Car counts a little low sometimes, but still, you can watch the races. It doesn't matter if there's 24 cars or there's 10 cars.
Right.
It usually comes down to two or three guys battling for the lead.
And you know what? And you guys put on the show every time. I don't think there's been a night of racing that we've had where somebody didn't come up to me and say, man, that was a fun race. I love that race. Loved watching that race.
That's what I heard him say about the 4th or 3rd of July race.
Yeah.
But it was one of the better.
Yeah, there's another one, right. One of the better races.
Yeah.
You know, even though I try to stress, let's not go four wide in turn one. But, you know, I understand. But you know what? The experience that you guys bring to the table makes a difference because we don't always get into altercations in that first race. We can go three, four wide and you guys get through it. And you know. And,
One of the best compliments came from, I'm blank on his name. He used to run Mojave for years.
Not Wall?
Wall Carter.
Yep, okay.
Thank you for helping me. Still, I'm getting old.
Yep.
We were racing down there one night, Dan and I were there, and Walt came over and he says, I always like it when you come here. He goes, everybody just seems to race harder and cleaner when you're here because I never really liked moving people or
luring
people to go by them.
Yeah, that's
and he said,
point.
They want to race with you because you race them hard and you race them clean. He said, generally, when you come down here, the racing is better. They just seem to race better when you're here. So but keep coming.
You know, and that's kind of what Matt brought up was, you know, you bring a certain level of experience to the track so the other racers that are racing against you know they have to step up their game. They know they have to race a little bit cleaner, a little bit better.
Yeah, Bill Black was another one that said something along those lines. He says, I like to come over when we were meeting up and racing at Havas. He says, I like to come race against you.
Right.
Because his son, Jason Black.
Jason Black,
he beat me at Paris one night.
No way. I didn't know.
First time win. He got out. He jumped up on the roof. And that's when we met Bill, his dad.
Yeah.
Dan and I went over to and Dan always did that. Whoever beat us, he'd go over and congratulate him.
Cool.
So he went over and congratulated Jason and Bill, and that's how we met Bill. And then I kind of had heard stories about Bill Black in his day. He was one of the badass guys over in Arizona at the dirt tracks. He was a heck of a late model guy back in his day. So, yeah, that's how we met him. And I kind of took a lot of pride in that statement that he comes over because he likes racing with
me. And Bill Black has mentioned that more than once, racing with against you currently today. And you know, we used to race against Jason when he was in the truck series, when it was ASA truck series back in the day. But Bill's always said that, man, I love racing with Mark. And, you know, you're one of the reasons why he likes to come race with us. So that's pretty cool. You know, we're getting close to time. Is there, like, sponsors or anything you want to talk about?
Nevada Sticker Park, the 3rd of July race.
I don't know if Steve had anything to do with that.
He was out there.
I know, yes. Yes, I was surprised, too, because it's been years since he's been to the track. And, I saw him, like, a week or so before and told him we're going to be out there racing and all that. But I was actually surprised he came because it's been years since we've seen him out.
It's funny because I hadn't talked to him in a while.
Yeah.
And he comes over on my street. He said every couple of months because there's I'll say a mid-70s Mustang that he's had his eye on. It's been in these people's driveway for 30 years.
So he's after, been after it for 30 years.
It's a Mach 1. It's a, he said it's a $100,000 car.
Right.
And it's been sitting there, and he keeps going over and offering and offering them. And I called him about the power drive transmission because I've been having transmission.
Right.
So I said, called him, to, and I hadn't talked to him in a while. The same thing. He goes, oh, I hadn't talked to you in a while and all that. And next thing I see him at the
That's really cool.
So, yeah.
And I've, just by the way, I've talked to him about coming to race with us in the trucks one time, and he wants to.
He should.
Yeah. And, you know, he knows how to drive. Like, you know, he's had some championships and all that. So I think we'll get him in a truck at least for one race or a practice night or something. He'll,
Steve in his day was fast.
Yes. And it's been a long time. But
and he was a good, clean racer.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes, he was.
Yep. So it'd be fun to race against him or at least just, you know, with all you guys, really, I just, it's a privilege for me to be able to race with you guys, you know, Bill Black, yourself, you know, even Stan, all them guys, you know, everybody that races with us, it's really cool.
Yeah, I'll date myself on Bill Black, but the Winter Heat Series, Carl Trimmer, who was fast back then, and a guy named Bill Cheeseburg, he was lumped in with those guys. He was that quality of a racer back
That's
then.
That's crazy.
But he was when he was younger.
Right, right.
But he still can wheel.
I'm telling you, he's the guy to beat. You know, I mean, he challenges you when he races against you all the time. So it's really cool.
Yeah, you would. Bill's older than I'm. 64. Bill's older than me. And when you race with him, you wouldn't realize.
He wouldn't know that exactly.
Yeah, he gets on and goes,
"Hey." Oh yeah, they know how to make a race. So, but no, that's cool. When you going to race anything different coming up, or what's your plans on doing some races the rest of this year?
A little bit of the dirt modified. I might take
in Mojave, or is that?
I'm not sure. Right now, I committed to. This is crazy, but we're reflooring the entire house.
Oh, sweet!
So we were trying to figure out a plan on where to move the furniture.
Sure.
And I just gave up. We're going to empty the house out, and Danny and his brother, they're tile setters. Mm-hmm. They're going to come in and do the whole house.
Wow, sweet.
So I just said, we're just going to take everything, stuff it in the race shop.
Somewhere outside of the house, right.
The truck is still in the trailer because the canopy, we're like, we're going to just empty the house, let him do all the flooring, and then we'll paint whatever walls we're going to paint and put everything back.
Cool.
And I said, the window to do it is now because I can leave the truck in the trailer because it's a few weeks before we race it again.
Yep.
So we went and picked out the flooring we're going to use.
Cool, cool.
I got that going on. So that kind of, for once in my life, something personal.
You got to take care of it. Yeah.
Normally, Lynn and I have been together 18 years, and she's like, we need to redo the flooring in this house.
It's about time, right?
I'm like, okay, we'll redo the floor.
You got to do the honeydews once in a while, every 18 years, I guess.
At this point in my life, I give up. And whatever she wants in the house,
let's do it.
It's yours.
Yep.
She doesn't come in the shop and tell me anything.
That's a good balance, right? That's how I do it. Yeah. So, hey, anything you want, no problem.
Yeah.
As long as I can do my racing and my stuff.
She never tells me I can't go to the races or give me an ultimatum or anything like that.
No, so that's cool.
It works out.
It'd be cool to watch you do some dirt racing again. I'll have to come watch you whenever you do
I know. I think Mojave in the heat of the summer is shut down right now.
Right.
A lot of the tracks do that.
Yeah.
It's just hot.
Too hot to do.
But I've heard rumor that Tonopah is going to kind of run more or less a regular type show because the people from Pahrump have nowhere to go.
Nowhere to go, yeah. I've seen Tonopah track. I've never seen racing on the track. So if you do, that'd be cool to go watch for my first time up there.
I just wanted to thank Steve Burke. He's always been there.
Yeah, and it's cool to see him out.
Yeah.
Hey, I want to talk about that real quick. July, I know we're out of time, but you know, we had our racers barbecue on that night. Thanks for contributing to that.
Oh,
like you do always with our you know, our barbecue. That's something we're going to do every year, and you know, going forward.
Yeah,
so
the next one I'll cut up more watermelon.
I'm telling you, I could not believe how quick that watermelon went. It was just, I kept putting it out. I was like, man, that's probably went faster than anything else. So definitely,
yeah.
So that was cool. I would have never thought that, and it worked. So thanks again, and we look forward to that, you know,
Yeah, anytime you guys are going to do a barbecue, count me in to help out.
Well, we appreciate that every time. So you always do, and can't thank you enough. So thanks for coming in, too, last minute.
It's always good to come in.
Yeah, cool.
A war story.
Yeah, exactly. It's always fun to hear, too. We always learn something, like Matt said. I learn something every time, so can't wait till the next one.
I like that it's just an open forum. There's no script.
We just, right. We just do our thing, so... All right, well, thanks for joining us. So we'll see you live next Tuesday at 6 p.m. at onwheelsnow.com. Thanks again.
We really do appreciate it.
Thanks. See you next week. I won't be here, but Gary. Cindy will be here with you.